when donors did had the leaves, they had a copy of their leaf too that they could put on their wall. And actually, I would very much like for Leo to discuss why there's two dog tags when you sign up for service.
So on the on the dog tags, when issued, every branch of service gets a dog tag. Every service member, regardless of branch, gets a dog tag. One is meant for a tow when your body is found during combat, and that way they can identify your body. Things have changed since then. It's not really the way we do things now, but that is the meaning for it. And then you have your other one that you wear around your neck as well with your tow one. And that's the meaning for it. So giving one to the family member and giving one to the monument would be symbolic in that regard as well. Yep.
Thank you very
Thank
much.
Thank you.
Pro Tem Gregory.
Yeah, Leo and Max both. So somebody donates money, they'll get a dog tag coming to their family, and then the other will be hung on the
hook. Yeah. They step on it. The donation for the monument is separate. There's a fundraising platform for the monument. It's already live. We just haven't been pushing it as much. And then we will have a separate purchasing program, if you will, platform to purchase the dog tags. It's going to be, you know, we haven't decided on the price yet. But yes, that's going to be two separate things.
All right. Max, I have a question for you.
Please, fire away.
How many veterans is it going to take to hold each sword up while you're welding it together?
Well, yeah, it's going to be a monumental effort, but we got this. Oh, yeah, I've already been, you know, talking with the engineer on just the procedure on how to, you know, put it together, when we're going to be doing footings, just really putting the cart before the horse, you know, getting things prepared.
It's a beautiful monument. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
So I have a couple questions, too. And, you know, we're talking probably top of or bottom of that brown is about 20 feet. That's how tall these things are going to be. And the level where you see the crown or the of the thorn, so to speak.
The wreath. The wreath of peace, sir.
It will look much different.
I know it looks like Christ's crown right now, but that's because that's not patinaed yet.
I'm just wondering how they're going to actually get up there to put all the different. I mean, we're going to see a lot of folks wanting to do that. And so I'm wondering what the thought is there.
Be happy to answer. So the initial goal is once the monument is approved and we can move forward with this and it's built, we will most likely put dog tags up there initially and then start figuring out how many we have that have been purchased. And then we'll probably do either a quarterly scissor lift up there. I know a guy who has a scissor lift by the name of Hammond, who I can ask him if we could borrow it. And then do it once a quarter and just update it so often.
Okay. You know, the other thing I'm thinking about too, because I see a lot of different family dog tags up there, it'd be nice to have like a compass rose with a degree saying that, you know, my dad's writing that degree or whatever for recognition, at least you won't be able to see it because it's going to be so high, you're not going to be able to read it.
We have some ideas for that as well.
Yeah, that would be a great idea too, with a monument, you know, basically over there showing where they can look. Yeah, this is a great concept, guys.
Appreciate it.
Councilman Strong.
How many feet across is the outer diameter of that monument?
About 18 feet, just shy of 20.
How many?
About 18 feet.
18 feet. Wow. Okay, thank you.
We're trying to bring a sensorial...
To this whole room.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
We don't have a sensorial on the east side of town where we're at, so we're trying to make our own.
Okay. All right. Any other questions from council? Let's open it up to the public. I mean, if you guys stand by, maybe you can answer some questions. Anybody wishing to address this item? Anyone online, Melissa?
No, sir.
We have one. Welcome.
Almost didn't see him. Good evening, Mayor, Council, staff. My name is Chris Rohrberg. I'm the commander of the American Legion Post 50 in Paso Robles. I previously sent the mayor and the council members my endorsement for this project, but as being a 30-year veteran of this area, I strongly, strongly urge us to approve this. This would be a great project, not only for us veterans, but for families. Thank you.
Thank you. You've got to have the Air Force weigh in. Welcome, Bill.
I flew in just for this event.
I'm a fifth-generation member of the United States military. My wife, her grandfather, joined the United States Marine Corps at 16. We were kind of shocked moving from Washington, D.C. to here that there wasn't really a memorial or large type of museum that was available. We think this is amazing. We think this is awesome. We're on record as endorsing it and supporting it, and I hope you do too.
Thank you. Anyone else? Public? Good? Okay. We'll bring it back to council. What we have before us tonight is to make a finding that it's exempt from CEQA and that we're going to be approving the preliminary monument concept only, where they're going to be coming back later with final renderings.
And so, I'd like to say that my family has fought in every war that has taken place even since the French and Indian Wars in this country. And I'm proud that my wife was a honored member of the Navy, and I didn't serve in a military capacity, but I was drafted into military research. So I spent my time trying to help you guys from behind the scenes. And I have been endorsing this project in principle ever since the days when Skip was in charge of the American Legion. And thank God to see it come to fruition.
Okay. Pro Tem Bailey.
So I make a motion that we recommend to find the project exempt from CEQA review pursuant to CEQA guidelines 15303, 15304, 15332, and approve the preliminary monument concept for Veterans Park, subject to the future City Council review and approval, final design, engineering, and funding, and the names of all the soldiers lifting the blades.
Second.
Okay, motion by Gregory, second by Bausch. Discussion. Okay, we'll call for the question.
Councilmember Gregory?
Aye.
Councilmember Bausch?
Aye.
Councilmember Beal?
Aye.
Councilmember Strong?
Aye.
Mayor Hammond?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
I think we're off on that. Moving on, we have a preliminary overview of enterprise funds budget 26-27 and 27-28, related five-year capital improvement program, and approved personal changes. Ryan, you have that for us.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and City Council. Ryan Cornell, Administrative Services Director. This is part two of our preliminary budget overview. Last 2 weeks ago, we went through the general fund and the supplemental sales tax fund and some capital improvement projects. Tonight, we are going over the enterprise funds, which entail the water enterprise, the wastewater enterprise, solid waste, and airport. Just similar to the general fund, each one of the enterprise funds is proposed to be balanced. Now, the enterprise funds are a little bit different in that the revenue sources that these functions are covered by are usually by user fees. So, for example, the water fund pays for the water operations, treatment, production, and the like, and that is primarily recovered by user fees that we charge. For the year, this is just a fiscal year proposed budget for 26-27. The water fund has appropriations a little more than $20 million. It has revenues exceeding that, so we're building up a little bit of fund balance there. The wastewater fund at right around $15 million, that one's for all intents and purposes balanced, revenues equaling expenditures. And then we drop down to kind of the smaller enterprises with solid waste, which is a newer fund, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in detail later. And then lastly, the airport fund. Those are the order I'm going to go into, so water, sewer, solid waste, and airport. So as we kind of dive in deeper. That's kind of the order of operations. So as far as water fund revenue history, again, the primary source of water revenue is from the charges that we push down to our ratepayers. We've had some steady growth in January of 2024. That is when we implemented the new five-year rate study, so you can kind of see a little bit of a bump up there. Interestingly enough, this fiscal year, and I think it has to do with a little bit with the automatic meter readings, the water consumption, not necessarily the price per water, but the actual consumption piece of it seems to be leveling off or is not as significant as years past. And so really we should see that kind of bouncing back here in the next couple of years. January 1st, 2027 is the last day that we have pre-approved water rates in place, and so over the next 2 years we'll likely start getting the water master plan together, which kind of leads into the update to the water study. It is important that we do these rate studies every 5 years or so that we're not falling behind and having to do significant increases in the future. But if you overlay the revenues with the expenses, you can kind of see from 21 to 24 or so, we've been kind of slowly increasing the fund balance. That was one of the main drivers of the water rate study, was to make sure that we reestablished and had healthy water fund reserves. And so moving forward in the forecast, we are projecting continued revenues over expenses that'll allow us to get at a lot of the capital projects that we need to be had. So the majority of the wastewater actually is part of the Nacimiento operations. As you are aware, the county of San Luis Obispo treats the transport the Nacimiento water from the lake to our wastewater treatment plant. That operations in of itself attributes to about 43% of the total water fund operations. So if we kind of remove that or outside of that, about 25% is personnel and the other is operating costs. On the right-hand side, it's by function. So needless to say that the Nacimiento water is part of the production, right? That's how we get the water out. And then along the same lines, treatment is another component to that. So that's how it's broken down. We do have one proposed budget adjustment that we wanted to get ahead of the two-year budget cycle. This is a position that is currently vacant. It's the water quality technician position, but we had some recent turnover of a water treatment personnel that does kind of the smaller micro filtration treatment system. And so since that staff person left, it didn't really make financial sense to bring a whole new other treatment plant operator on board. And so we're kind of hybriding this water quality technician to that treatment. So it's not as necessarily as high as that water treatment position, but it is an enhancement of current duties. So when it's all said and done, we're looking at about a net increase of about $3,000 per year for that position. And again, we want to get this one ahead of the two-year budget cycle, so this would be a part of the council action tonight. Moving over to wastewater, very similar to the water fund, the majority of these revenues are from charges for services. The last rate study that we did for the wastewater fund was in 2021, and so we have the last rate effect that went into place on April 1st, 2025. And so the wastewater fund is due for both a water master plan and a rate study in this next 2 year cycle. And so that is something that you can anticipate in the horizon. And really those rate studies and those master plans, that's really the blueprint for these enterprise funds, right? We're justifying our rates based on these expenses, and that's really the blueprint. So it makes budgeting much easier for me, because I just take that rate study and just plug it right on in, make any adjustments that are known since that time. But because we don't have any scheduled rate increases, we are planning to keeping this revenue flat in the horizon until we get updated rates and changes are made, if applicable. Real quick, in 2024, you see a pretty big green bar there. That was a pretty large grant revenue that we received related to the recycled water line project. So very similar to, again, the water fund, when you overlay revenues and expenses, you kind of see that the fund balance is kind of leveling off between $10 to $15 million, which is kind of right around minimum requirements. At the last council meeting, I mentioned that the wastewater fund is debt heavy. It's has a little bit more than $35 million worth of debt. And that's why when we go over to operating expenses by type, it's about a third. So operating expenses is about a third, or I'm sorry, debt is about a third of the operating expenses out of the wastewater fund. And that's just repaying the three large debt services, the wastewater treatment facility upgrades, it's the tertiary or the recycled water upgrades, and it's partial of the recycled water distribution system. So taken together, they represent about $4 million annually per year. Those debt terms, depending on which one it is, it's usually 2040, 2049. So we have several years left to go on those debt obligations. And I'm skipping over this capital projects. Both the water and the wastewater capital projects are, no offense to Christopher, but they're kind of boring. They're just upgrading water mains, water lines, sewer mains, sewer lines. So just the normal routine that the city operation has to do. Moving on to the solid waste fund, this is one of the newer funds that we created in 2023. Historically, it was a part of and a part of the general fund, but because of the regulations and the complexities of solid waste over the last handful of years, we decided to take the net tipping revenues that the city receives and put it in a dedicated fund so that we could track these expenditures and functions more properly. And as you can see, 23, 24 was when we first kind of started figuring out how we were going to allocate costs, and really 25 was the first year that we really started using the new fund. But even with the new fund, we've actually already made some accounting changes to this. I don't know if you remember from last year, before when we received revenue for solid waste, it was just the net tipping fees, so it didn't include the hauler expense. Now what we're doing in accounting purposes, we're going to show both the revenues, gross revenues that the landfill receive, as well as the expenditures to the hauler, so that we can kind of see a bigger or a more accurate picture of the landfill operations in totality. We have some obviously some big capital projects to do, so you'll kind of see this fund balance increasing significantly, but that's really just to kind of set money aside so that we can get to some of those partial landfill closure funds or partial closures and some of those flare upgrades and the like. I should also want to note too that aside from this fund, we also have a closure, post-closure, and corrective action fund. The CalRecycle requires agencies to set money aside every year so that when the landfill is closed and we're not receiving revenues anymore, we have enough money to carry on those post-closure activities and corrective actions if anything comes up along the way. Moving over to airport. We've seen some pretty significant revenue growth in the airport fund recently. This is interesting how it showed the budget. So I'm sorry, the legend on the bottom got messed up somehow. But this is lease income and interest income revenue. And from 23, you can kind of see we had a pretty good jump from 23 to 24. And then kind of flattening off in 25, but we do anticipate continued lease revenue growth out in the airport in the kind of the forecast period. On the flip side, charges for services, that apparently legend worked out properly too, but you can see just the charges that we pass on to users has increased significantly from 25 to 26, and again, that's Mark's efforts in raising revenues for the airport. So if you kind of take that similar situation and kind of compare revenues to expenses, for the most part, the airport enterprise stays even or breaks even, right? It's a balanced budget, even if they're actuals. But we do have in the forecast some significant capital projects that on the horizon that if we really want to tackle on it, we're going to need to find some outside funding sources. So the majority of that is the terminal expansion. But it also includes some helicopter parking expansions, some rocket engine tight testing, construction taxiway H, transient apron expansion phase one. So there's a number of significant multi-million dollar projects that the airport fund wants to get at that we're, you know, based on the current level of revenues, we're going to need some assistance with. On the left-hand side, so about 56% of the airport operations, it does go to personnel and benefits. The other 25 or so percent goes to operating. But if you look on the in the history and what the graph on the right-hand side does, it only looks at FAA grant revenue versus CIP expenditures. And, you know, yeah, the grant's not going to cover all the expenditures, so we do expect expenditures to exceed revenues. But as you kind of get out to the outer years in 2029, and especially in 2031, there's a pretty big delta between the grant revenues that FAA's on their horizon versus what we have to make up in the difference. And so this is going to be kind of an interesting case as we plug along in the airport of what we can't afford and what we can't afford. Now, if we remove all of the projects off the airport list, operating speaking, so operating revenues, operating expenses, the airport fund is self-sustaining. So it's really the capital projects that's showing that major negative withdrawal in reserves. We do have another proposed amendment to the airport fund. Last fiscal year, we had approval of adding to the maintenance group, but this one was going to be on the airfield side, airport operations technician. After a review of the job description, what they would be responsible for, the need in the department, we are recommending reclassing this to an airport supervisor position. So this position will actually be able to provide direct oversight to the maintenance staff, both on the maintenance side and then on the airfield side, and then be able to cross train and the like. And this will allow Mark to focus his energy on kind of the longer term strategic plan and conversations with tenants or future tenants and the economic kind of growth out of there. This one does as a little bit more of a significant increase, about $40,000 a year. That increase has already been incorporated into the budget numbers that I have already shown you in anticipation that this gets approved. But if it doesn't, then all those future numbers will get adjusted accordingly. So this kind of concludes the end of my presentation. This is step kind of three out of the last five. We had the council goals and priority settings on May 6th. We're in this meeting, and then we should be able to finalize those goals and strategic priorities on June 2nd with final adoption on June 16th. I do want to kind of take a pause and then provide Mr. Hewat an opportunity to further discuss the goals and strategic priorities for the next couple of years.
Yes, Mayor and Council, maybe we can take questions first on the presentation, okay. And then I'll transition to the goals discussion real quick.
Yeah, I'd personally like to throw out one real quick. The buildings that we built, or we actually bought on Second Wind Way, we, I think, made a loan from our general fund or reserves to purchase that. When is that going to be finished? In other words, we're paying it off back to the general fund, I think. Do you have any, I can't remember the years that that's going to happen.
I don't remember the years that it's going to be fully paid back, but the campus has five buildings on it. It went through several iterations because we weren't sure what function was going to be there. Right at one point, we thought a police substation would be constructed there, and so we used some development impact fees for that. But when it's all said and done, the airport owns and paid for one hangar, and that's leased. That's with them. The other four buildings were paid by the general fund. And all of those lease incomes generated from that is going back in the general fund. Historically, it's been right around $750,000 a year. But with the updates to Zone 5 coming in, we're expecting that to drop down by about $650,000 a year.
Right.
The overall purchase of the improvements were $6 million. And so we were anticipating about a 10 to 15 year payback period at that time. But I'll have to go back and do some math to see how much.
Once the building's repaid to the general fund, though, it's because it's an enterprise fund on the airport, those revenues would stay in the enterprise fund, wouldn't it? That's the plan.
So So when the prior owner, it was just a land lease, right, that the prior owner had with the airport, and they built all the improvements on it. So the city took over essentially that owner's kind of land lease. And so the city's general fund is paying the land lease still to the airport fund today, as it was historically before we purchased it. But that land lease doesn't expire till 2040, 50. It's still a bit out there. So it wouldn't be anticipated that the airport would receive any lease revenue from those improvements until the land lease expires. And then everything gets turned over to the airport, the land and the improvements, like any other typical lease that is conducted out there.
Hmm. Okay, well, I'll get back with you on that one, sidebar. So, all right. Pro Tem Gregory.
Yeah. In your chart on the airport fund, you show in a chart where the reserves dive, that one. So what's going on with those future years?
So that's the capital projects. There's a good, like, five capital projects. The right way, or that was this year's, I'm sorry. The terminal reservation, the helipad, parking expansions, and the like are projected in the out years to be more than what we have resources for. And so it's an identification that if we want to get at all these projects, we need to find additional resources.
So that doesn't include potential grants from the FAA or anything like that?
There is some grant assumptions in there, but only the kind of the ones that we know today or the ones FAA has in their five-year horizon.
So today we do have a reserve fund.
Correct. It's right around. It's right. It's, yeah. It hovers right around $1 million of unappropriated reserves.
Thank you,
Councilman Bausch.
Thank you, Ryan. Going back to the water fund, we have our water treatment, water production. Talked a little bit about. Any change? We have the Nasi water. There's discussion with. And we'll tie it back to Praga and how much water is used, not used. There's a lot of angst in the public sector about how much of that could be used. Can you give us, in your opinion, are we making good use of that fund as far as, if you want to call up Chris, go ahead, as an investment, or is that better served as the population increases?
I want to make sure I understand your question properly.
Yeah, Christopher can come on up. I hate to get you to walk on that knee, but
we've got about 14.
Because it's about entitlements, right? Is that what it is that we're not receiving
If we have 10 to $14 million in that fund, right? In water production, and then we have another 1.5 million in water treatment. And people are concerned. I've had this conversation a few years ago with Christopher, and I think I understand how it is, but it keeps coming back. I'm sure that Mayor Hammond hears about it in Praga as well.
So yeah, we hear a lot that the city of Paso doesn't use Nasi water, which is entirely untrue. We utilize that source in a couple of ways. One, we use it directly through our Nasi water treatment plant. So we use that all year round. It is down for a short period, typically every year, for maintenance on the pipeline, but that's been pumping since 2015, and that pumps about 2.4 million gallons a day. We also use it in the summertime. We use Nasi water, return it into the Salinas River to recharge the alluvium so that we can maintain production in our Thunderbird well fields. We do this typically every year. We do it more so during drought periods. So we're using it to the fullest extent that we can. We do have some allocation that we are not currently using, but that we are planning to potentially use in the future. We're working with our other Nasi partners to find other ways to utilize that source through a turnback pool sales program. The issue right now is there's no buyers. People are not wanting to invest in take on the capital expense to invest in the infrastructure necessary to convey that water. So there is water available. We are looking to get into short-term sales. We've We've already kind of established what we think we'd be comfortable with entering into, you know, short, medium, and long-term sales programs for potential buyers. Now, to suggest that the city ratepayers can somehow pay for that or subsidize water use outside of city limits is, I don't think, something that we really want to consider or would be legal. So we utilize that entitlement to the fullest extent possible. We have plans to utilize that source more in the future. And we also are looking to partner with anybody who's willing to purchase whatever's left in the interim.
To that end, would that water have to be treated?
Depends what the use is.
And do we have the capacity to treat it today?
Through the plant you're talking about?
I'm not sure I understand your question. Are you talking about treating water for use outside of city limits?
No, just within city limits.
Our plant we fully utilize in the summertime. We can't run it full time during the winter because the demands just aren't there. So typically we're running it about half flow during the winter time. In the summertime, we ramp that plant up to full capacity.
Do you anticipate there being a time in the future that we would have to expand that treatment? So
we already have a site laid out. We already have a preliminary site plan should the need arise. We have a robust portfolio, but each one of those sources of supply comes with its own risks. Because it's available today doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be there tomorrow. So exactly when that need will arise is somewhat uncertain. The state also has a lever to pull and continues to pull in terms of pressing urban water providers to reduce their use through various conservation measures and use targets. So how that's all going to shape up in the future with climate change, with regulation, with potential risks from emerging contaminants of concern, we need to be in a position of flexibility and strength, and that's what that NASI supply gives us.
So when that time comes, we should be able to build it. And would these be the funds that we would use to build that expansion?
We are not currently budgeting for an expansion of that plant, but that would be incorporated into future master planning efforts and rate setting process.
Ryan, is there any thought as to where those funds would come from?
Through user rates.
I'm sorry?
They would come through user fees like everything else does.
So user fees would have to be increased, or they renew user fees?
It's the same thing, right?
I don't know.
Yeah, it would be the same thing. The existing fees would be increased in order to support that capital project.
So not on, if we need more water, we'd have new users. Would it be fair to say that the new users should support that increase?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
If we have enough water use, is what I just heard you say, right? We don't need to expand our water treatment.
Based on the existing circumstance right now.
So we don't need to increase that. We have plans, but we don't need to implement those plans. Should we need to implement those plans, would be based on increased water use.
Or a decrease in another source of supply.
Or decrease in another source. Okay. But if part of this, let's assume for a moment that the source stays steady. Mm-hmm. And so we need additional sources based on new users.
So demand pays, so growth pays its fair share. Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you. If we have new users, then we would it be fair to assume that those new users should pay for the new treatment?
If growth is driving the increase in demand, growth would be paying for that portion.
Thank you.
Yep.
But isn't it true that in many ways we're at the mercy of the state and state mandates to us? So if we look at the history, we went to the state for the loan to get the capacity to have enough water for everything and to treat it. We got the loan. Shortly thereafter, they forced us into rationing. Because originally we had built this so that people could use the water and green this entire city. They didn't have to get rid of their lawns and all this other stuff, the way it was originally done. But as soon as the rationing came in, we still had the same bill to pay, but we had less amount of our water than we could sell to our customers in order to pay for that bill. And that's one of the reasons why the bill is so high.
There were several. This existing facility was never conceived that way. This existing facility was designed as really a peaking facility. At the time that this thing was designed, it was pretty much thought it was going to be running in the summertime. If you recall, many years ago, our demands used to peak around 11, 12, 13 million gallons a day. We couldn't pump enough water to keep our tanks full, and our tanks were dropping day after day after day, right? And so the idea here was to alleviate that demand. But to your point, yes, the state has come in. They have implemented a lot of mandatory demand management measures that have contributed to the declining consumption inside of our city. If you look at our water use now, and you compare it, you trace it back to the 80s, I mean, we're using the amount of water we were using back in the 80s. So in spite of growth, in spite of all the growth that you see out there, our actual water consumption continues to decline. And that's counterintuitive for a lot of people. That's why the question about growth, if growth is causing that increase in production, then yes, they'll be paying for that. But the more likely scenario is there'll be other threats and other things that come along that drive the need that would put that burden on the ratepayer.
Any other questions?
Don't go.
Councilman Beal?
Yes.
That was very good. Actually, I highly recommend the presentation in kind of the Resident Academy that you had. It has such a great overview about our sources of water, historical water use, how that's changed, overlaid with population changes. I think that'd be very helpful for people. How do you assess how much money you're pulling aside for your capital improvement projects to put in the reserve fund?
We do that as part of the master planning effort. So it's a two-step process.
Master planning effort, what we do is we'll look at the existing deficiencies in the system, and then we'll look at those things that are going to be needed to serve growth. And then we'll come up with a plan, you know, the boring stuff, replacing pipes, upsizing mains, that kind of thing. Those typically used to satisfy existing deficiencies. And those deficiencies are often related to fire flow and or just aging infrastructure. And then we also look at, you know, based upon information we get from community development, what areas are likely to grow and what's going to be needed to serve those. And then so we estimate what kind of projects we're going to need in the future to provide for the future of Paso Robles. And then we develop an entire capital projects program. And then we determine, you know, based upon what's driving the need, if there are existing deficiencies, then that's ratepayer funded. If these are things that serve growth, then that goes into connection fees and it's developer funded. So we establish that baseline capital need that gets folded into our rates and connection fees. And so that's how we know we're collecting enough in order to pay, because those connection fees have to cover all the portions of the capital program that serve growth, and then the user fees have to cover the cost of operation, plus all those capital projects or needs that are necessary to satisfy deficiencies in the existing system.
Very helpful. So we're going into sort of a new rate study season, is that right? And a new kind of master planning?
We are. We're working on wastewater right now, and then when we conclude wastewater, we'll move into water.
And then I notice here, I think it's important for people to remember that the road work that we see happening is, in many cases, is integrating with your capital improvements in terms of sewer and wastewater, right? Even just looking at this sheet, you can see the shift in getting a lot of those streets handled with new utilities, right?
Yep, that's a piece of it. So we'll look at the five-year road plan, and then we'll get together with ComDev and Public Works, and then we'll identify and we'll look at what roads are, then we'll look at our capital improvement plans and the utilities, and then figure out which of those streets have utilities that need to be upgraded. And then we'll incorporate those into those documents.
Great, thank you.
Christopher, one more thing. Let me.
I think we've gotten into the weeds a little bit about water, but just to maybe clarify most folks, stating our water portfolio, we have roughly 13,000 acre feet and change, and at build out, we're only going to use 9,000 acre feet roughly of that portfolio. Is that correct?
I wouldn't phrase it like that, Mr. Mayor. Yeah. I would say we've got an allocation of 6,488 acre feet of NASI.
Of NASI.
And we have a Salinas River entitlement of 4,000 acre feet per year, roughly. And the basin is unrestricted. So there's no limits on what it is that we can pump from the basin.
Right. We've done very well with our portfolio, many different sources.
That's right.
And the way we're managing our water is done very, very
but well. Let me stress, though, while we don't have a limit on how much we pump, we know that the basin is under a significant amount of stress. And so what we do when we try to balance our portfolio and decide what it is that we're going to be providing to customers every year, we take that into consideration. And you can see that in the fact that our basin pumping has been declining over the years. In fact, we pump less than half as much from the basin as we did 10 years ago.
I think our portion on the actual basin use is less than 3% of what they're calculating right now in Praga?
That's correct. I mean, this past year we had to pump a little more from the basin, just under 2,000 acre feet. Historically, we pumped as much as 4, but in recent years we've pumped as little as 800.
Yeah. Well, we do need to use them. The way water rights work, you use them or lose them, essentially. So we need to keep a certain level up, but we're also cognizant of our neighbors as well. So
that's correct.
Yeah. Okay. I think we got.
Question for Ryan. If we're going to go back.
Yeah,
to
Ryan. Ryan looks like. Thank you, Christopher.
Okay, so I got my lesson in how we sort of allocate dollars to the capital improvement funds for water and wastewater. How does that happen in other departments in terms of like the mechanics or doing the math to set aside the money in the different kind of reserve funds?
So yes, it is a little bit different because we don't have a general master plan, but we are trying to get there, right? We have in the budget for the next 2 years a parks master plan. So, these master plans, these economic development strategic plans, even the library and the recreation strategic plans, they're great tools because I do, right, I have a 10-year forecast, and whenever we approve these or we add an element to it, it's a plug and play, right? I plug that line item in, put it in the 10-year horizon so that we're keeping a track of making sure that we're keeping the cash flows or the reserves that we need in order to get at these capital projects. And so, yes, it is a little bit of a work in progress, obviously, always, of what we can afford and what we can't afford, and then how project costs change or evolve, too. So it's definitely keeping an eye on the current situation, but, yeah, taking a step backwards. And this is the beauty of these two-year budgets, that we are able to take these longer or bigger perspectives and looking at capital projects that I think Chris wants to add.
Can I make a comment just after that? Okay, thanks. So, I mean, you really got to something that I've been getting my head around. There are these different reserve funds. We set aside money for IT, for fleet, for pipes, you know, in all of these different areas of the city administration. We have pots of development impact fees. What I'm concerned about, because we are talking about this in terms of goals and budgets, is that, you know, we have this master parks plan that's going to make some recommendations. Maybe reserve funding is going to be part of that. We just approved the full design for Larry Moore. We have emerging and growing park infrastructure needs that I'm not sure we've planned for. Right, so Christopher has money to replace that main, and I'm not sure if we have that to match what our needs are that's going to be coming out of the recommendations.
I can just chime in real quickly, just try to provide some additional context to your question and comment. So the items that are before you tonight are, of course, enterprise funds. So as you know, they're supported by revenue that is fee supported and can't go anywhere else. It must be used for projects within the different enterprise funds. When we start to talk about the general fund, the general fund doesn't have a sub funding source for capital projects. Essentially, we go through a process every year that we look at available revenues after we meet operational demands, ongoing demands of the city. And of course, the general fund is supporting, you know, your core city services, police, fire, streets, parks, libraries, administration. And so the amount of available funding for the most part varies every year, depending on revenue projections and again, operations. And what I would say is though, over the last 6 years, well, really going back to 2012, we've actually been able to create a little more space in the general fund. One, because of Measure E12, now I-24, taking the lion's share of the streets projects that would have otherwise been trying to fight for funding within the general fund. And then of course, Measure J20 has taken a burden of a lot of the public safety capital needs, including like Fire Station 3 and upgrades and work done to the Public Safety Center, which has also freed up what otherwise would be funding for other types of capital projects. Notwithstanding that, there are still demands and needs throughout the operation, and the Parks Master Plan will definitely help crystallize some of the work and the priorities that we may not even know exist today. And then I think we'll be coming back to you at the conclusion of that work with some discussion items and potential recommendations around how we tackle some of those bigger projects, because it's Larry Moore, we heard a little earlier tonight about interest in the 36th Street campus. There's a lot happening kind of in the park space right now.
That's helpful, and I actually think the enterprise department funds are the easy ones because they are self-funded. And you know, just when I was a young adult, and they'd say, "Well, make sure you do your savings first, and then you pay your bills, because if you pay your bills and do your spending, then you'll never have any left over for savings." You know, it's been a long time since we've had a major development of a park facility, and we're up against it. And I'm just afraid that in general, we've sort of kicked the can down the road in terms of looking at parks as infrastructure. Just like we save money for roads and pipes and the fleet and the fire truck with the ladder, like we save for all of that. And we haven't done that in parks. And so we are in the situation we're in. We all have agreed upon like a vision. We know what the need is. And I think we should sort of apply the same thinking, values, planning to the parks infrastructure that we do with other areas in the city.
Any other questions from council? All right, Ryan, thank you. And we'll open up the public. Or do you want to make your presentation?
Mayor, I would defer to you. I'm happy just to give you a quick update on the goals and then
Turn
it over. Would that be okay?
Sure.
So included in this agenda item this evening was some mention of the ongoing discussion around council goals. Of course, we had our large workshop on the 6th and have been working to incorporate those updates and feedback that you all provided into what will become hopefully a final set of goals for you to consider at your next meeting. But with that said, we did want to leave some room this evening for any additional feedback, both either from the public or the council, as you've had time to review and digest the conversation from the 6th. Staff won't be going line by line tonight with the initiatives, but Mr. Malowitz is in the back with a pen and a piece of paper ready to take any additional notes or feedback. Otherwise, again, the feedback that we received from you all at your last meeting will be incorporated into the next set of goals you see. So with that, that concludes that part of the discussion.
Okay, very good. We'll open up to public. Anybody wishing to make any comment on this item, please come forward.
Seeing none, anyone online?
No, sir.
Okay, what before us, then we have to do is receive and file the report, and then I also see a couple reclassification resolution that you want to have done too, Ryan. That's part of this motion. So, Council, I'll leave it over.
Comments on
the comments?
We got public comment. Like we got emails and we had public comment.
I already opened it up public comment. Yeah.
Do we get the comment?
Yeah, you can certainly. We can bring it back to Council for direction and or action. So, yeah, certainly.
Now?
Or yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I just want to recognize that we had a letter from Mr. Rasmussen from the Paso Robles Housing Authority, and I think he brought up very good points in terms of talking about the different tools that possibly could be at the city's disposal. Again, I don't think we need to prescribe what the tools are, but I think making sure that the goal around kind of affordable housing is not too narrow, that it's and that there's areas for sharing what's happening in different jurisdictions, sharing between different people that are doing different things, to make sure that we have the full picture about what the city could possibly doing in affordable housing. Again, we didn't get the update, so I'm not sure if it's included there. And then I just want to echo what the family said today. We have, our demand exceeds the capacity for different youth, parks, rec programs. The need is great. We all sat in our wonderful interviews with 20 plus enthusiastic teens. 25, and we wrote pages of notes about all the great ideas that they had, and they wanted more teen activities, right? We know that the teen center is underutilized. I am concerned, and I appreciate that we're looking at a budget situation. But I also think, you know, we pass things here in the hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars around infrastructure, you know, around big projects. And I think we could be serving our families by considering a process that I'd be open to staff, Ryan, about expanding the capacity of staffing at REC. So like in the REC goals, they talk about growing like this, you know, growing services, helping the community. And the line items under that were very important, but they didn't address necessarily meeting the demand for services in the community. So we're gonna finish with the goals next time. We're gonna have a budget in a few weeks. But I'm curious what my colleagues think in terms of how we are matching our goals and our budget to our vision that we set.
Okay. Question?
Fred? I was going to make a response if I could. And that is that it's different in different departments as to how you approach it. When you get to parks and recreation, it's a totally different thing. Because, yes, we have our youth program, our youth programs, we've got our adult programs that are actually scheduled through the department. But then we have the general public that just wants to go out and do things. And that's the area that is very difficult for us to deal with. And we only do, all we can do there is provide them the infrastructure to do it in. And that's basically what we're doing in our whole program right now for parks. We are providing the infrastructure for them to program themselves and go and use and have their own recreation. That's the example we've got is the pickleball carts that are going on to Sherwood Park. There's going to be a huge number of courts there, more than any other place, 50 new parking spaces, places for them to sit and wait, shaded. All of this is considered. The only thing we're waiting for now is PG&E for the lighting, and we can proceed and finish it. But That's the case in so many things. We have a program, we go so far, we've got the budget, we've got the money set aside. It's not that we don't have the money set aside. On a lot of these things we already do. Much of it done by grants. And we've gotten the grant money, we've got deadlines to meet, and then we hit a stumbling block, like an outside source that has to come in and do something so that we can complete the project. But that's just life. And we have to deal with life as it comes. So some of these things you can't intricately plan every step of the way. And it depends on the department. Water can do a better job than that than we can. Okay? But they know how to do it, though. And they have specific things they're doing. Some are there. There's too much the public involved.
Pro Tem Gregory.
Yeah. So I think it's really important, Councilwoman Beal, that when you have a budget like we have an operating budget and a very tight budget this year. So all the departments have to operate within those budgets. But as part of the goals and part of the budget, we want to do a park master plan, okay? We don't know how we're going to pay for that. We're just going to get the master plan done, get it before us, and continue in that direction as we go along. But we have to live within our means. So in other words, the budget, between the budget and the goals are a little lofty and out there, but the budget is reality. It's going to pay the staff. We can't expand our staff. We can't expand our programs because we don't have the funding. But what we do have is the opportunity to do a master plan for the parks or whatever it is, even on the airport, for example. Finish the airport master plan and get into the spaceport. We can only take that so far. And then we don't even know what's in the next two-year cycle after this 2 years. So it's really important to incorporate the goals, but also realize you have to live within your means with a budget. And there's two very different things, including childcare, all kinds of sports activities, whatever the enterprise funds are the easiest because they're a drop of water, you pay a penny, whatever it is, those all work. But even in the airport, that one chart where you see the reserves fall off, we don't know. But we have a budget that we can manage from here for the next 2 years. We get everything done, but we're not expanding. So it's really important to differentiate that when you're thinking about goals and budgets. So what you want to do is align your goals with the budget that's happening before us. We're maintaining our process and our progress. That's our budget.
Councilman Bausch.
Thank you.
So I think it's important that as we learn how to rethink governance, we are doing an amazing job of providing a vision in goals. I think the goals that we have set upon are amazing. We run the risk of demoralizing the whole situation by providing too much detail, getting into the weeds, and providing an impossible task for staff to accomplish. At some point, we need to stay somewhere in that, and I'm going to say 25, 30,000 foot range, and let Mr. Hewitt decide how to come back, and Mr. Malowitz come back. There's a finite amount of money to be spent. Prioritize where that's spent, and I appreciate your passion on where to prioritize that. But that means something has to be cut. We heard that earlier. You can have a position, but something else has to go. And we run the risk of cutting something else if we say too many things we need to add. Mr. Gregory makes a great point. I mean, we have a parks master plan. We're not sure how we're going to be able to afford that. We want to afford it, but how? What's the best way to make that happen? I want to see new property being acquired. We can't afford that. I have to let that go. It's gone. It's great to have that passion, and I appreciate that. Don't ever let